Here on case 2014-727, Amber Salee et al. Versus Stephanie Watts et al. For the appellant, Mr. Bolick.
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court.
Counsel, will you stand a little closer so we can take advantage of the microphone? Thank you.
Absolutely. Good morning. My name is David Bolick, and I'm here on behalf of appellant defendant Three Rivers Local School District. We ask that you reverse the First District's decision that has interpreted a statute and the term operation to include the duty of supervision, and it will cause illogical results. The issue at this case is the interpretation of Ohio Revised Code 4511.75E. This statute instructs bus drivers to remain parked until students who discharge make it to a place of safety on his or her residential side of the road.
Counsel, isn't this really fact-driven, and we're just here, what are we going to decide? We're going to just decide on the facts of this case, whether the trial court got the right interpretation applying the law to the facts of the case, right? There isn't much law to be decided, is there?
Well, Your Honor, I do think that the facts play an important role in this case. However, the interpretation of the statute not only will apply to the facts of this case, but the way the First District decided this case will cause that interpretation to be allowed to be used to reach an absurd result in any county in Ohio.
Well, if the bus driver had pulled off, left the child off on the right-hand side of the street, and the child's home was on the left-hand side of the street or road, and just dropped the child off and pulled away while the child's standing there on the wrong side, the child didn't run off or anything else, just didn't wait for the kid to cross the road, you'd agree the school would be liable, right?
I would not agree. I believe that 4511.75E is a duty to supervise, and I think if you look at the purpose of the statute is to a place of safety. I believe that the revision of the statute.
So if you drop a child off on a busy street or road, on the wrong side of the road, and you pull off, and knowing the kid's got to cross the road to get home, you've left the child in a place of safety.
The duty of the statute is to leave a child in a place of safety. And if you look at the history of the statute, you see that the extension was added, a place of safety on his or her residential side of the road, to instruct bus drivers what really a place of safety is for those that are immediately crossing or those passengers that intend to cross the street. But if a student gets off the bus and decides, in your example, to stay there, if their parent is there, why should the bus driver have to force that student across the road?
In the scenario, the parent wasn't there. Let's say the little girl gets off the bus. She lives on, she lives on the right side of the road. And she's off the bus on the left side of the road. And the bus driver pulls away knowing that that child has to cross the road unescorted. Is that duty of the bus driver met to place that child in a place of safety?
I think that you could definitely argue the duty is not met, but that duty would not be of operation. And I think there's
the duty would what?
The duty would not be the duty of operating the bus. I think that would still be a duty of supervision that bus driver has. And I believe that there is a very important distinction between the duty of supervision and the duty of operation, because the school district, such as Three Rivers, is entitled to immunity under 2744.01, and there are very limited exceptions to that immunity.
But you're reading it to be just strictly the operation of a motor vehicle. You're not incorporating the duties of the bus driver for the supervision of the children under their care into the duty of operation.
That's correct. This court in Doe versus Marlington Local School Board District determined that supervision of students is separate and distinct from the supervision or from the operation of the motor vehicle. It did determine that operation is more than just driving, but that court dealt with a child who was in a terrible circumstance and was actually abused on the bus, and this court ruled that the supervision of students on the bus during the operation didn't incorporate the operation of the motor vehicle.
Did not.
One of the reasons I believe the court used was the fact that in Wilson versus Stark, this court determined that the purpose of governmental immunity to political subdivisions such as school districts is to ensure the fiscal integrity of those political subdivisions, and that only in very limited situations should that immunity be abrogated. There are five specific exceptions listed. One is the operation of a motor vehicle. And the first district determined that the violation of 4511.75E is the operation of a motor vehicle.
Are you saying that the statute is more in the nature of supervision? Because if you were to read it literally, as it seems the first district has done, when you say the child shall be released to a place of safety on his or her side of the road, I mean, absurdly or literally, you would have to say the bus driver stops the bus, escorts the child across the road to the side of the residence before then getting on the bus and continuing on. So is that what you're suggesting, that if there is a violation of the technical language of the statute, it's not operation of the motor vehicle, but it's more of a supervisory duty?
Yes, Your Honor, that is what I would argue, that any violation of the statute, if it did apply to the strict wording of the statute, that as soon as the bus leaves, it's violated, that violation is the violation of supervising a student across the street.
Counsel, how does a bus driver ensure this supervision? If a child is disembarking from the bus, doesn't the operator of the bus have to activate the stop sign so the traffic stops and lights are flashing? And you would agree that's the operation of the vehicle, would you not?
Yes, I would agree that using all of the safety features is an operation of the vehicle.
That's the operation. That didn't happen here for the benefit of this child to cross the street, because that's what that's intended to do. You operate the bus with all these safety features for the purpose of allowing the child to cross the street, correct?
Well, what happened here, you are correct, but what happened here is not that the bus driver didn't use those features, is that the student, after discharging the bus, ran up the street to a friend's house. So when she had the opportunity to cross with those safety features, she chose not to.
And when you say she chose not to, this is what, a five-year-old?
A six-year-old.
Six-year-old, okay. So you're saying just by stopping, by putting the safety equipment on, that was the extent of the operation that this bus driver was responsible to do?
Yes. Supervising the students across the street is not does not mandate any operation of the bus.
And in this case, didn't the bus driver also honk to try to get the child's attention? Wasn't that part of the record?
That's correct. The bus driver, in her deposition, stated that she honked the horn. The six-year-old continued on, and once she was on the porch in a place of safety, the driver pulled away, called the base, and informed them where that student was if the parents came looking. The next day, she then filled out a report explaining what had happened. The real question about the duty of supervision versus the duty of operation wouldn't matter if the statute is interpreted logically. The First District explained its decision actually will lead to a logical result. It puts bus drivers in a no-win scenario. The way that this can be resolved is interpreting 4511.75E with a temporal element. The 2nd and 12th districts have already done this. In Glover versus Dayton Public School District and Day versus Middletown Monroe, the court has determined that the operation of the bus does not, the injury does not come from the operation of a bus when the bus is not present at the time.
Counsel, I guess you're going to have to ask us, though, to disagree with the First District. And when they were quoting from the Colwell case, they say it's difficult to conceive of anything that could have been more dangerous than for the defendant to place the bus in motion when traffic was approaching before this child had reached a place of safety. Do you disagree with that characterization by the First District Court of Appeals?
I don't disagree with that characterization, but I would disagree that this situation is anything like the Colwell case. In fact, I think if you look at the purpose of this...
Did this bus driver drive away before the child reached her residential side of the street?
Yes.
Isn't that exactly what they were talking about in Colwell?
No, in Colwell, the bus driver pulled away while the student was crossing behind the bus. He knew the student was crossing, he saw traffic oncoming, and decided to leave anyway. That student was discharged and immediately crossing this street. In this case, that student decided, whether out of an impulse because of her age.
As I understand it, this accident happened when the bus was making its third stop after this stop.
I believe it was at the third stop, yes, sir.
Okay.
So is it reasonable that the bus driver saw this little girl go onto the porch of a friend's house and said, okay, that's a place of safety?
Well, I think the statute has to be interpreted with a reasonable interpretation based on the purpose, and it would be reasonable for a bus driver to fulfill their duty if a student reaches a place of safety.
Even though the statute says the child has to go to their residence.
Side of the road.
Yes.
Yes. And the statute included that language only to indicate to a bus driver where a true place of safety is. But this statute is for all passengers, not just six-year-olds as in this case. A 17-year-old could be mad at the bus driver and based on this statute be able to get off the bus and just stand there.
I'm still having trouble understanding how this case isn't simple error correction, and I thought we didn't do that.
Based on the interpretation of the statute, we have to interpret it with a logical conclusion, and that is the issue in this case.
That just comes down to a factual determination that you feel the trial court got it right. Applying the facts, a lot of the facts of this case, and the Third District got it wrong, applying the law to the facts of this case, and that's error correction, isn't it?
If you look at it that way, that would be. But we are not asking for that. We are asking that the statute be interpreted in a manner that focuses on the purpose and the spirit rather than the words alone.
Counsel, I'd like to stick with that statutory interpretation question for a moment. There was a friend of the court brief filed on behalf of your client by the organization OACTA, and their brief really takes on the distinction between negligence and the immunity statute. And their argument is, you know, there might have been a violation of the statute requiring the bus driver to make sure that she was on the right side of the road, but that's different from immunity. And there's even a provision in the immunity statutes that say civil liability shouldn't be construed to exist under another section of the revised code. So under that, are you in support of that argument as well? That's different from what you're arguing.
Yes, I would be in support of that argument. Essentially, if you look at the exceptions to immunity, the fifth exception allows for a statute that directly puts on a school district or a political subdivision civil liability that would overcome and abrogate immunity. 4511.75e does not include such a phrase.
So that would be an alternative to the argument that you're making, that you could still win if we were to say, you know, there was a violation of that statute. From the literal reading, the bus driver violated. But that doesn't mean that the immunity is lost.
That's
for the
correct.
School district. Okay.
That's correct. But I think we have to look at this statute and focus on the purpose of it and interpret it in a way that will avoid illogical results. There are a multitude of consequences based on the literal reading of the words that are absurd.
You've referenced the 2nd and the 12th district that have discussed this. Are there other cases, to your knowledge, that have similar questions with students who either don't cross the roadway or have other claims arising in this context?
Yes. We touched on Caldwell versus Bruce, which did deal with a student who was discharged and tried to cross the street and was struck by a car.
Yeah, that's factually distinguishable. Really, as Justice Pfeiffer keeps trying to get your attention to focus on, what do we need to decide here? This seems to be, depending on what the facts are, we know what to do in the Caldwell case. We know what happened, for example, in the Middletown case. And each one seems to be factually specific.
What we need to do is interpret 4511.75E, focusing on the spirit of the statute to avoid a logical and absurd result.
Well, that's what I'm saying is, haven't we done that on a number of occasions? Hasn't this court done that on a number of occasions?
It has.
Just keep doing it every time there's an injury?
Your Honor, it actually has not decided on how 4511.75E should be interpreted.
How do you think it should be interpreted?
I think it should be interpreted with a temporal element.
What's the temporal element?
The bus be within the nexus of the injury.
Isn't that causation?
So that's not temporal, that's locational, right?
Well, it has to do with the time of the injury. The time of the injury would be while the bus is present.
So the injury has to occur while the bus is present. That's what you want us to write?
Yes. That's how I want you to interpret it.
Well, would you say then that is the operation of the bus?
No, I think if we're looking at the statute 4511.75E, the duty that is being given to bus drivers is to supervise students.
So you say under that, if the bus is present and within 10 feet of the injury, let's just say that, that is a failure of a duty to supervise, and that will trigger liability. That will vitiate the exceptions.
That would be, the bus driver would be liable under that statute, but it would not abrogate immunity because supervision is separate and distinct. Pupil management.
But what's the good of us interpreting it, this level of supervision? Why do we have to go there if it's not going to affect the immunity?
Well, if the General Assembly wanted this statute to abrogate immunity, they could write in a provision mandating civil liability. They did not do that.
Okay, but if the bus is 10 feet, in proximity to the child, or 100 feet, what difference does that make? Because you're not agreeing that a failure to supervise is going to allow for an exception to the immunity.
That's correct. I don't think it would apply to exception of immunity because this court has already ruled the supervision is separate and distinct.
Your view is unless the bus driver operates the vehicle, there's no negligence, right? There's no liability because the immunity comes from the operation of the vehicle.
The immunity exception of operation of a motor vehicle would not apply because the statute indicates and mandates a duty of supervision.
I got it.
Thank you.
Although, counsel, the first district apparently did not like the way the statute was written either and said it was illogical, but they were still going to follow it and noted that this is remanded for further proceedings, that you still could win if her conduct did not cause the injuries. So this is like just phase one. If we rule against you, you still have the potential of winning at the trial level, correct?
That's correct. But the first district's ruling looked at proximate cause still being an issue, but based on fiscal integrity being the purpose of immunity, we should never get to proximate cause. It should focus on the duty element, and the duty of this is to supervise.
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Mahoney.
Thank you. Madam Chief Justice and Justices, my name is Dennis Mahoney, and along with Corey Britt, we have the honor of representing Amber Salee. Are we prepared to say that a statute that does not, that this statute that we're talking about, 4511.75E, does not interpret the operation of a motor vehicle? If we do so, we are throwing a lot of cases out the window. It is a motor vehicle operational statute. The discharging of students is the operation of a motor vehicle. The courts have already ruled that. Specifically, we have several. I want to, though, take this moment and distinguish Glover and Day, which are the two cases that the appellant has been focusing on. Those cases analyzed revised code 2744.02B5. Those were not the operation of a motor vehicle. Those were the negligent supervision. What they would like you to do is to take revised code 2744.02B1, which is the operation of a motor vehicle, and add a negligent supervision provision to that, which would take revised code 4511.75E and say it's no longer a motor vehicle operation statute, it's now a supervision statute. And that's not what it is. This is a serious injury case. This woman.
What does the bus driver do when a child refuses to cross the bus, to cross the roadway in front of the bus?
It's a very interesting question, but that goes to, I think, there was already a provision the school district had in place. They decided the year right before this that previously children of tender years, and that's a key distinction in this case. We're talking about a child that was 6.5 years old. Previously, kindergartners and first graders were not allowed off the bus unless there was a parent present. In other words, the parent could be on the resident side.
I'm trying to utilize your time effectively. Does the bus driver have to wait 10 minutes or 15 minutes until the child decides to cross, in your view?
In my view, yes, it shall. This provision was put into place for the protection of our children.
Does a bus driver have a duty to escort the child across
the roadway?
Yes.
I would say that in a lot of these cases, there's monitors on the bus in a school district such as this. But that, yes, they should have put the bus in park, got off, grabbed the child, and said, you need to cross the street because that's what this statute is. This statute's been in place for over
60
years.
And then would there be any liability if the students on the bus, one became injured for one reason or another while the bus driver was operating a school guard capacity?
No, because that would be negligent supervision, and the statute gives them immunity for that. It does not provide them immunity for the negligent operation of a motor vehicle, and
so
the courts have ruled.
Assuring that the child crosses the roadway to the resident's side is, in your view, operation of a motor vehicle.
Yes.
Okay.
And
thank
the court
you.
And the courts have ruled that.
Counsel, what about impossibility of performance, as is suggested in your opposing counsel's brief? They suggest we look at the child gets off the bus, runs into their friend's house, and sleeps overnight. They're not coming out, so do we close the road for the nighttime and the bus with the remaining children sit there until this one child gets to the right side of the street?
Well, you know, I guess we could throw out a lot of hypotheticals and arguments and say that.
Well, that's actually in this case, though, isn't it? Didn't the bus driver call the station and say, this one got off the wrong side and she's at CJ's house?
Issues of fact, it's disputed. There's a dispute as to whether or not that horn was ever honked. There's a dispute as to whether or not she ever went to the porch. There's another witness that was in that testified.
I'm trying to follow Justice O'Donnell's question. How long, in your view, does that bus driver have to stay there with a bus full of children until this child is delivered to the right side of the street?
I would submit to the court that becomes a factual issue for a trial court and for a jury to determine that the issue here is that there is a statute, and was that statute violated, and does that abrogate?
So Justice
immunity?
Lansinger is correct. This isn't over, is it?
No. I don't believe that it would be as long as this court upholds the statute. You know, I will throw this out to the court right here as an issue. The case of this case is fact specific. Okay, this is a child of tender years. We as a society could get into a public policy debate as to if a school district, and the courts have already ruled this. I'm not talking going to go about that. The issue of impossibility of performance, as you said, that's a distraction from this case. But the reality is this case is fact specific. And we're talking about a child of tender years that doesn't have the capacity to appreciate the risk of crossing a street, which is why the General Assembly not only took that statute, which just to say you have to get them to a place of safety, but they added the provision to a place of safety on the resident side of the street.
What is the legal issue that you want us to address? You tell us it's factually specific, but we're trying to find rules for all, and if this is so specific, there isn't any rule coming out of it. So what is your legal issue here?
Our legal issue is that revised code 4511.75E is the negligent operation of a motor vehicle when you do not discharge a child to the resident side of the street, and that under our revised code 2740.
That'd be an absolute rule in every case. That's what you want us to write.
I would say that in this case, until the legislation wants to change it, that it is.
Okay.
But it doesn't give the absurd results. We're talking about 60-plus years. You haven't seen a plethora of these cases come in front of the Supreme Court or anywhere else. And why? Because, as the amicus brief for our side said, the operation of a motor vehicle is covered by every school district under a policy of insurance.
But, counsel, I guess, as Justice Pfeiffer has said already, that is now the law of this case, correct?
Yes.
Court of Appeals so said.
Correct.
Why wouldn't this case just be improvidently allowed? There's going to be a trial, is there not?
I would argue that yes, ultimately yes. I believe that this case is here because you have a chance to once and for all say that this is an operation of a motor vehicle getting a child to the resident side of the street. If the state legislation wants to change it at that point, let them. I mean, they can do that. But in this society that we live in today, motor vehicles are more prevalent than ever. This statute's been on the books for 60-plus years. It hasn't brought about these absurd results of people spending the nights. You could always have another rule. They could have a permission slip, if you will, and if they have a permission slip, then, you know, that's a supervision issue, and so we've supervised this child correctly.
Well, counsel, presumably, if it gets to the absurd level, no lawyer's going to file the case. And in this case, if we affirm the Court of Appeals or we just improvide, it goes back. And the only result is that the judge was wrong for kicking the case out on summary, which means you go forward.
Correct.
And it's not a slam dunk to convince a jury under the facts of your case that there should be an award.
That is absolutely correct. Your assessment is correct.
Counsel, what if we agree with you that there was a violation of that statute?
Yes.
We don't add the temporal element that your friends on the other side would like us to add. Tell me how that still relates to the immunity question. I'm looking at 2744.02b5, that civil liability shall not be construed to exist under another section merely because that section imposes a responsibility or mandatory duty upon a political subdivision. Isn't that what we have here? And wouldn't that then suggest that even if we agree with you that there was a violation, that the district still has immunity?
That is an argument that they have made. And I would suggest to you that if we're really looking about the fiscal integrity of school districts, and they would actually be responsible to have to pay for that, then that provision would come into play. But in this case, when it's the operation of a motor vehicle, they're not going to be personally responsible to pay for this. There's an insurance policy in place that would take care of this because it is the operation of a motor vehicle. The whole portion of immunity, when it changed from ministerial to discretionary and all of these rules that we keep playing with and putting in, they tried to make it clearer. And I don't know that they did, except that 5 basically says negligent supervision. They're wanting to extend negligent supervision to another provision that imposes liability on them.
I don't think I know how you've answered my question. Are you saying then that the negligent operation of a motor vehicle is more specific, and so we look at that and we don't look at B5 and even consider whether this is a mandatory duty that doesn't impose civil liability?
Absolutely.
Maybe I've misunderstood your answer.
No, absolutely. 2744.02b1 says political subdivisions are liable for injuries caused by the negligent operation of any motor vehicle by their employees when the employees are engaged within the scope of the employment and authority. The act of driving a bus is the bus driver's duty. And it's more than not just wrecking the bus. It's discharging people from the bus, as Caldwell has said. That's been the law of the land since 1949.
Does that provision, the 4511 provision, does that apply no matter what the age of the child is? If we have that hypothetical 17-year-old that gets off the bus and doesn't go to the resident side of the road, is that the same? We still have strict liability in your view?
I think you have strict liability, negligence per se, as the First District says. Does that need to be changed? That's the General Assembly's job to do so, because they're the ones that rewrote this to not just be a place of safety, but to the resident side of the road.
So to the students watching, they need to get off on the right side of the bus and get to the right side of the road?
I think there is a minor distinction, though. When we're talking about children of tender years that don't have the capacity, and that they actually train them. They say, okay, when you get off, this is what you hear, this is how you get across the street, this is what you do. They do that with older children too. So the statute's there, and I believe that if you show negligence per se, you still have to show proximate cause.
Gotcha.
You still have to do that element, and that's what trial attorneys have to do. So we're saying that don't take away a statute and in an immunity where they've already abrogated immunity for the operation of a motor vehicle, don't extend that even further to make it impossible, because if that's the case, and that child goes out and walks across the street and gets hit while the kid's crossing the street, they would say, well, that's negligent supervision because the child was crossing the street, and we're not responsible for making sure that they, we don't have to go out and cross them across the street.
What recourse does a bus driver have if a child is not going to their residence, not going to their side of the road and where they're residential? What recourse does a bus driver have? They've got, you know, 30-some kids on the bus. You've got a 10-year-old that's saying, you know, for whatever reason, he wants to stand there and talk to a friend, or, you know, he's just not paying attention.
You know, I think that you put the bus in park, you have all the warning lights on, you get out of the bus and you say, Amber, you need to cross the street before I can leave, or I'm calling the radio, or you need to get back on the bus and I'm taking you for violating my rules on this bus. I'm taking you back to the office and we're going to call your parent, which we did the year before, if the parent wasn't there. And that's what you do, because the safety of our children is paramount. This statute is because exactly what happened in this case is what this statute was designed to prevent, and that's a child getting hit by a car and getting seriously injured. These are our children, our grandchildren. We want to put them in priority. That's why we say, if you don't operate that bus correctly, we are going to hold you responsible. We want our children protected.
So the operation of the bus is starting the bus before this event occurs. That's how the statute starts. No school bus driver shall start the driver's bus until And it's, I mean, it is poorly written because of the various scenarios that we're coming up with. So isn't it a question of literal, do we read this literally and then let the jury determine what it determines, or?
And the answer to that question is yes. And I will tell you that ORC revised code that we're talking about, 4511.75E, is a criminal penalty. And in Caldwell, where there was a death, that's why that case was there. I mean, that's the operation of why this statute is in place. It's also a criminal statute.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds. Would you start by addressing what Justice Lanzinger had noted and the First District found, that the operation of the vehicle constituted negligence per se because it constituted a violation of 4511.75E, which provides that, quote, no school bus driver shall start the driver's bus until after any child, et cetera, et cetera. So they're specifically instructed, you may not start that bus. Now, what does start mean? Does it mean drive off, make the bus move? Does it mean engage the ignition? You know, I have some questions on that. But clearly, starting a bus, any of those things I just mentioned, is an operation.
That's true. Starting the bus, I think you would have to agree, is operation. But I think regardless of if 4511.75E is a duty of operation or a duty of supervision, it has to be interpreted based on the spirit and the plain meaning of its words. And if this court has regularly maintained the statutory interpretation mandate.
Well, it's pretty clear. You're a bus driver and you can't start your bus until after the child who may have alighted therefrom has reached a place of safety on the child's residence side of the road. Those are the exact words. It couldn't be clearer.
But if we look at only the words, it's going to lead to a logical result. The
okay,
first
that,
district.
That's not what I'm asking you to say. You do agree that those words are very direct, very specific.
Yes.
Okay, and you're saying because there's an illogical, you can conjure up a scenario where you would say it's illogical, such as the child who is 17 and just won't budge and won't go home for whatever reason.
Yes, or a scenario like my colleague said that the bus driver forces a student across the street.
Why is that illogical?
Well, if that student really wants to be at a friend's house and the bus driver has to physically force someone across the street to say, okay, I complied with the statute, I can drive off, that student's just going to cross back. Is it really our General Assembly's intent to leave a student in a worse place of safety? Now, well, you fulfilled the statute, you forced them on their side of the street, it's safe to drive, even though you know they're going to cross back after you leave while traffic is flowing. That wouldn't be the intent of the General Assembly. That would be absurd. And its statutory instruction requires courts
to interpret. Well, you're saying, under your scenario, the bus driver doesn't even need to try to get that child to their residence. Doesn't even need to exercise their authority as the bus driver and say, you know, Amber, you need to get up to your front porch.
That's correct. I once the student is off the bus and outside the control of a bus driver.
You say the bus driver has no duty then to say, Amber, get over to your house.
If the student doesn't immediately engage into crossing the street, I don't think the bus driver has the ability to have any duty.
Then why did this bus driver even honk the horn? What was she attempting to do there?
She was attempting to get the student's attention, but the statute doesn't require her to get someone's attention. If she is not going across the street.
That's a pretty strongly worded statute for you to say that there is no intent behind it to ensure the safety of this child.
Well, the intent of the statute is the safety of children who discharge and are immediately crossing the street. If they're not going to cross the street, what duty does the bus driver have to force them across the street?
What you're trying to say is you want to delete the last portion of this of the statute. You want us to say that who has reached a place of safety, period, and then you would read out the rest of the statute.
I do not want the court to delete that portion of the statute. It's there for a purpose to define the ultimate place of safety of a student. But it can't be so literal that a bus driver has to either indefinitely wait, not 10, 15 minutes, days, whoever knows
how
long.
Well, the solution that opposing counsel came up with was, you know, Amber, you need to get back on the bus, and we'll call your mother when, you know, we get to the end of the route, because you're not going home.
But how does the bus driver get the student back on the bus?
For a six-year-old, I think you just say, get back on the bus.
The bus driver attempted to get the six-year-old to cross the street, and the six-year-old didn't listen. But the statute isn't just for six-year-olds.
Well, I understand that, but you're saying that it's like, oh, you know, the kid is off on a frolic of their own, and I've got no responsibility here.
If they reach a place of safety, and they're not intending to cross the street.
Okay, wait. You said if they reach a place of safety and they're not intending to cross the street. Obviously, this little girl intended to cross the street very shortly after she reached a place of safety, and I think it's debatable whether she reached a place of safety. So the child ran across the street and got hit by a car.
Even if the bus driver in this case remained parked where she dropped off Amber still could have gotten hit.
With the safety lights on the bus?
That's correct, because she didn't cross the street at her bus stop. She crossed the street down the road. There would have been nothing stopping traffic where she was stopping, where she stepped out between parked cars. Traffic wasn't stopped.
Counsel, all these things can be argued to a jury,
right,
for the jury to determine whether there should be responsibility by the bus driver or not, correct?
That's correct.
And isn't that the ultimate choice here, to wait and see what the jury determines as to proximate cause, the extent of the duty, and so on? The statute, though, seems to be very clear, and it's written the way it's written, so that the jury will have to also determine whether it was followed or not.
That is the potential ultimate outcome at this trial in this case.
But not in this case. Hasn't the First District Court of Appeals already said it's negligence per se? Isn't that the law of this case right now?
The law of this case is that there was a breach, there was a duty and a breach of duty, and that duty and breach of duty was operation of a motor vehicle, so the court still has to decide proximate cause.
But the Court of Appeals said that was negligence per se. Isn't that really the legal question we have today?
If the
a violation of the statute is negligence per se, take it out of the jury's hands.
Well, it would still be up to the jury to determine the proximate cause.
I understand that, but as to negligence, that's history in this case, is it not?
That is.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.